Thanks, Darren. And it's a blessing to be here, and I do need prayers, please. And I'm praying for you because my desire is that you would have things that would speak to you out of here. And I don't know all of you. I barely know myself. And so I don't know everything that's going on in your life. But so I'm praying that God will take something into these words that were written down several thousand years ago, that and that through this, that you will be touched in a way that I don't know about and you may not know about yet. So that's my prayer for you. I wanted to start with just a quick snippet of Bible history. So several weeks ago, I was thinking about the sermon, and I was thinking about kind of what had been going on around me, some of the heartbreak that had been going on around me, and this phrase came to my mind, the Balm of Gilead. And I'd heard this in a song or something like that. I heard this phrase before, but I didn't really know what it meant, and it kind of just stuck there. And sometimes you have thoughts that fleet through your mind and are gone, and some you have that stuck. So I had to dig a little bit into it. So I wanted to share just a little bit of information about this as an intro into the sermon. So Gilead, you probably can't see that on this screen very well, so I'm going to give you a zoomed in view. It's east of the Jordan River. It's now kind of in modern day Jordan. You can see where it is in comparison to Jerusalem, for those of you who know where Jerusalem is. And it was known for a lot of its crops of spices, of ointments. And these were kind of taken throughout Palestine from Gilead. And there was specifically a balm of Gilead, and they're still used today. You can look it up and buy it online. It's known for its herbs and spice crops, and this is what the kind of a definition of this specific ointment is. It's a substance used in perfumes that is derived from the resinous juices of the balsam poplar tree. And the herb's name derives from the ancient region of Gilead in Palestine, known for the great healing powers of its balm. So that's kind of what it is. But it was started, because it was well known, because it was trafficked throughout Palestine, it kind of became used as a symbol as well. And you'll hear Gilead show up in the scriptures a lot, in the Old Testament especially, but then there are a few that talk about this balm of Gilead. One of them that was really interesting that I didn't know about, this is in Genesis 37, 23 through 28 is the story where Joseph is taken by his brothers and put in a pit, and there are traitors who come through, and they were going to kill him, but then one of them would try to spare them and said, well, let's sell him to these traitors. And while he was gone, they did it. But these traitors were specifically traveling from Gilead to Egypt to take their balm and their ointments to them. So here's what it says. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, beheld a company. This is in Genesis 37. I'm going to read verses 25 and then verse 28. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And they sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph in Egypt. Now, there's a little bit of foreshadowing here I had never caught before. Aubrey pointed out to me when we were talking about this verse. So Joseph was going to be carried into Egypt as well, and he was going to serve as this balm for his family. Him going to Egypt preserved his family and his lineage for years when they would have been caught in this drought without a recourse. So this symbol of balm of Gilead as a healing. But the most kind of well-known scripture you can find in the Bible about this balm of Gilead puts it in a little bit of a different context. So we're going to open to Jeremiah 8:18 through 22. And there's a fair number of scriptures in this presentation, and I've kind of put some of the highlight verses in there, but they're not the whole passage. So I'd invite you to follow along. I'm going to be reading from the books most of the time. So this is Jeremiah 8:18 through 22. And so if you don't know that much about Jeremiah, we don't read from Jeremiah that much. He was one of the major prophets, and he was during the time where he got to see the fall of the kingdoms of Israel. He got to see everything that led up to that, where the people were not following what they had been told to do, and God kind of submitted them to punishment to try to get them to turn around. And so he got to see these people go through this transition, and he got to have this relationship with God where he knew the heart of God somewhat, and he knew what was going on and where things were going in the future if they didn't turn around. So this is interesting thing about Jeremiah too, is that he really cared for his people, and he loved them, and he was so sad to hear what was coming on them, and that he could not get them turned around, and that they weren't listening. And so he's called the weeping prophet is one of the names for Jeremiah, because he wrote, we think, Lamentations, and you can read in the book of Jeremiah, he's lamenting over the fall of the house of Israel and for the captivity that's coming. And this is part of that. So we're going to read in Jeremiah 8, 18 through 22. When I would comfort myself against sorrow, my heart is faint in me. Behold, the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people because of them that dwell in a far country. Is not the Lord in Zion? Is not her king in her? Why have they provoked me to anger with their graven images and with the strange vanities? The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the hurt of the daughter of my people am I hurt. This is Jeremiah speaking here. I am black. Astonishment hath taken hold of me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then is not the health of the daughter of my people recovered? So this is the attitude of Jeremiah. He's mourning that there isn't this this balm is not present to save his people and to save them from the coming captivity, from their iniquities. This balm is missing. But thankfully for Jeremiah, I'm really glad for Jeremiah, after having to see all this vision of what was coming and how much heartache that must have given him, he also got to see just a glimpse of hope of what was coming. And we're going to read from Jeremiah 3, 31 through 34. He got to see a vision of this balm that would come in the future. So Jeremiah 31, 31 through 34. This is a prophecy of what was coming after this fall, after this captivity. Behold, the day come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in that day that I took them out of the land, took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant which I shall make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and I will and will be with their God, and will be their God, and shall be and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, for the least of them, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and they will remember their sin no more. So Jeremiah got to see this balm that would come in the future as well, after the people had been scattered and taken into captivity. And Jesus is really that symbol, that balm. And we're going to read, you know, if you read throughout the prophecies of Isaiah and Jeremiah, you would see that they were constantly pointing to a Messiah that would come. And one of the characteristics that they said that as a signal of this Messiah is that he would heal. And so I'm going to we're going to go through a bunch of verses that talk about Jesus and this healing capability that was given to him, that he used not just as a signal of who he was as the Messiah, but also because of the love and the compassion he had for the people of the time and he has for us. This is, let's see. So there's about 30 healings that are recorded in the scriptures, and we're going to read them all tonight. No, we're not going to read them all tonight, but we are going to read a few of them, quite a few of them. And there's just, as I started reading through all these different accounts of healings, there started to be a lot of characteristics that were shared. So I'm going to read, this is Christ introducing himself, kind of, as the Messiah. This is in Luke chapter 4. In verses 14 through 21. Let's go to Luke 4, 14 through 21. There's going to be a lot of hopping back and forth between Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. So, Luke 4. So you might keep your fingers in those sections. 14 through 21. And Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit into Galilee, and there went out a fame of him throughout all the region round about. And he taught in their synagogues, being glorified of all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath appointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, recovering of the sight to the blind, and to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And he closed the book, and he gave it again to the minister, and sat down. And the eyes of all of them that were in the synagogue were fastened upon him. And he began to say unto them, This day in this scripture is this scripture fulfilled in your ears. So you'll see there one of the hallmarks of this Messiah is that he was sent to heal the brokenhearted. So he wasn't just sent for the physical ailments. That wasn't going to be all he was going to heal. He was going to heal their hearts too. And so tonight, as we kind of read through those, that's one of the things I wanted to make sure we focused on is, I know we all need healings. Some of us are going through things that I don't even know about. We need physical healings, and we need spiritual healings. And our focus as physical beings is often time on the physical healings we need. And we're not as aware of the spiritual healings we need. We're not as quick to share them for prayers. We're not as quick to testify when we're healed from them. And one of his missions here and how we know him as Messiah is that he was sent to heal the brokenhearted. So as we read through these, let's focus on our hearts as well. So let's go now to Matthew 8, 14 through 17. We're going to start getting into some of the healings. Matthew 8, 14 through 17. And when Jesus had come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid and sick of fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. When the even was come, they brought unto him many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word, and healed all that were sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, Himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. So that's in Isaiah 53 is where that verse from Isaiah is. And this is another example of his healings being a sign of who he was. This is in Matthew 11, 1 through 5. So it's really interesting in this section of the New Testament how Jesus and John the Baptist are both working apart from each other, but they're both doing the mission that God had given them. And they kind of have awareness of each other. But John sent his disciples to find out about this Jesus. And I think probably more for his disciples' sake than for his own sake. I think he probably already knew. But let's read Matthew 11, 1 through 5. And it came to pass, when Jesus had made an end of commanding his 12 disciples, he departed thence to teach and to preach in their cities. Now when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples, and said unto them, Art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Go and show John again those things which ye do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, and the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed he whosoever shall not be offended in me. So this, just knowing that Jesus was doing healings and he was preaching to the poor, was enough of a signal to John that this was the Messiah, and he was beginning his ministry. So we are going to go through some more of these. I'd like to kind of transition into some lessons, some common ingredients or common components of these healings that we're going to read through. And just a couple disclaimers, though. I know you're all dealing with things in your life, and I don't want to read these in a vacuum. I know that we all need healings. And when I'm presenting these, I don't want it to come across that I think if you haven't been healed, that I think you're doing something wrong necessarily. But my desire is more to give you encouragement that we serve a God who does heal. And I know sometimes we may deal with these things we need, these heartaches or these physical ailments. We may deal with them for all of our life. They may never be healed in the way that we're expecting. I'm thinking about Paul, who said he was given a thorn in the side, and that, as far as we know, that persisted with him for his entire life. And I know sometimes we have these wounds that are meant for a purpose, for our eternal warfare, our welfare. And we're going to be, like I mentioned, we're going to be jumping around a bit. If you'd like to follow along, I'd love that too. That'll help, because I'm not going to have the whole thing on screen. And then towards the end, I've asked some of our brothers and sisters to help with reading through one of the longer passages. I'm really excited for them to get to do that as well. Okay, so this is one of the components that I didn't think about initially, but then I started to notice a trend. And that's for a lot of these healings that we have recorded in the scripture, there's a time of mourning. The people are in mourning before before these healings occur. And I wanted to read this one in John. This is when Lazarus is raised from the dead. And there's this really interesting part of it where Jesus mourns as well. And he fulfills that that commandment that he had given, that we should mourn with those who mourn. And I wanted to just to call out, I don't know if we think about this all the time, that mourning is not a sign of a lack of faith. It really, I mean, it's actually kind of an acknowledgement of, you know, that we're in a world of loss, we're in a world of hurt, and we know there's something better. That's why we're mourning. We're mourning because we're in this fallen world right now. And we know that there's something else and better. It's different than hopelessness. Hopelessness is more of, you know, you don't recognize that there's anything after this, and so you don't have a hope. There's a difference between grief and hopelessness. Hopelessness, grief is a godly expression. Lamentations are a godly expression. So let's turn now to John 11, 1 through 45. Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was that Mary which anointed the Father with ointment, anointed the Lord with an ointment, and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Let's remember this verse. We're going to talk about it later again. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And when he heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that, saith he to his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples said unto him, Master, the Jews have of late sought stone against stop to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? And Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of the world of this world. But if the man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I might wake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Albeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking a rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them, Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent that ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us go also go that we may die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou had been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet he shall live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? And she said unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary, her sister, secretly saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house, and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been there, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping with her, he groaned in the spirit, and was troubled, and said, Where have ye laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold how he loved him. And some of them which could not Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that this man should not have died? Jesus therefore again groaning in himself cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. And Jesus said, Take ye away that stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. And Jesus saith unto her, Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people that stand by, I said it, that they may believe and that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto him, Loose him and let him go. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. One of the points I also wanted to make about mourning, we see how Christ was willing to mourn with these people, even though he knew what was coming. He mourned with them for his friend and for their grief. One of the things I think I've seen, at least myself, struggle with mourning is it's hard. It takes opening yourself up a little bit. It takes to mourn with others takes two parties at least, and it takes someone who's willing to admit that not everything's okay, that there are trials, that there are heartbreaks. And it takes someone who's willing to stop and listen and to mourn on their behalf as well. So I've seen this before. You know, we walk by each other all the time and we ask how we're doing. And our social norms are for you to say everything's great. At work, there's a guy who always says he's living the dream. But that's not reality for most of our life. And so it takes us being willing to stop and to be open and admit that we are having trials. And it takes us on the other side to be willing to stop when we ask someone how someone is and ask how they're doing and being willing to answer or listen to them and give an answer. All right, one of the things that, of course, that we see in these stories is faith as a requirement for these healings. And it's not, and it's a very active faith. In a lot of these stories, Christ asks for their faith, but he also asks them to act and to do something before that healing is revealed. I'm not going to read all of these. I think I'm going to end up skipping some slides, but let's read this one. It's Matthew 8, 1 through 3. There's an example of some active faith. And this is faith that is willing to proclaim without any doubt what Christ is capable of. When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. We see this one now in Matthew 9, 20 through 22. This is another statement of faith that came before the healing. And behold, a woman which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years came behind him and touched the hem of his garment. For she said within herself, If I may but touch his garment, I shall be whole. But Jesus turned him about, and when he saw her, he said, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. And then let's go to Luke 5, 17 through 26 to read this one. I love this story. It's one of my favorite stories. So this is not just healing of the person, or faith by the person who wants to be healed. It's faith by his friends as well. It's Luke 5, 17 through 26. And it came to pass on a certain day, as he was teaching, that there were Pharisees and doctors of the law sitting by. And that's interesting to think about, that Jesus is about to perform this in front of Pharisees and doctors. And the Pharisees and doctors of the law were sitting by, which were come out of every town of Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was present to heal them. And behold, men brought in a bed of a man which was taken with palsy, and they sought means to bring him in and to lay him before him. And when they could not find by what way they might bring him in before the multitude, they went upon the housetop and let him down through the tiling with his couch into the midst before Jesus. And this is one of those stories that's just amazing to think about yourself being part of this scene, to get to be a fly on the wall for the story. And when he saw their faith, their faith was really evident that they would go to this length to get their friend in there, he said unto him, "Man, thy sins are forgiven thee." And the scribes and the Pharisees began to reason, saying, "Who is this which speaketh blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" But when Jesus perceived their thoughts, he answering said unto them, "What reason ye in your hearts? Which is easier, to say, 'Thy sins be forgiven thee,' or to say, 'Rise up and walk'? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, I say unto thee, arise, and take up thy couch, and go into thine house." And he immediately he rose up before them, and took up that which whereon he lay, and departed to his own house, glorifying God. And they were all amazed, and they glorified God, and were filled with fear, saying, "We have seen strange things today." So we have to be like this man and his friends. We have to be willing to step out in faith, even when the fulfillment of what we're looking for may not even be in sight. We may not even have an idea of what could possibly solve this problem. I've been in that state a lot where I just can't even see any way this could possibly work out for good. And we still have to step out in faith. We have to be willing to forgive before it's asked of us. It's something that has been put to me. Are we willing to follow Christ's teachings, even the weird ones, trusting that they're in eternity? That's the best thing, that he sees our internal need. Okay, we're going to read in 3 Nephi 8, 5 through 11. This is a passage of Christ on this land and one of his healings. 3 Nephi 8, 5 through 11. And it came to pass that when Jesus had thus spoken, he cast his eyes round about again on the multitude, and behold, they were in tears, and did look steadfastly upon him, as if they would ask him to tarry a little longer with them. And he saith unto them, "Behold, my bowels are filled with compassion towards you. Have ye any that are sick among you? Bring them hither. Have ye any that are lame, or blind, or halt, or maimed, or leprous, or that are withered, or that are deaf, or that are afflicted in any manner? Bring them hither, and I will heal them, for I have compassion upon them. My bowels are filled with mercy, for I perceive that ye desire that I should shew unto you what I have done unto your brethren at Jerusalem. For I see that your faith is sufficient that I should heal you." So as he says in that last verse, well, I guess I should read that. Let's read the continuation of it. Let's read through 11. "And it came to pass that when he had thus spoken, all the multitude with one accord did go forth with their sick and their afflicted and their lame, and with their blind, and with their dumb, and with all that were afflicted in any manner. And he did heal them every one as they were brought forth unto him. And they did all, both they which had been healed, and they which were whole, bow down at his feet, and did worship him. And as many as could come for the multitude did kiss his feet, insomuch that they did bathe his feet with their tears." So this faith was a component of what was needed for this healing. All we need sometimes is just that grain of mustard seed faith, that we know that we'll be willing to come enough that we'll be willing to come to him with our problems. So this is another one that wasn't obvious, but as I was preparing for the sermon, I got just a memory of a sermon about 3 years ago by our brother Bob Hedrick. And I don't know if you remember this. This was at a conference, I think it was 2014. And I don't remember the details of a lot of sermons, But when this came to mind, I remembered a lot of it. And it was a very impactful sermon for me at the time. And as I went back and listened to it again, it impacted me again. So I'm not going to read a lot of this story because we are already short on time. But if you will look up this sermon and listen to it, it will benefit you. And then we won't have to read this story right now. So if I put the URL right here, if you search for, if you go to the cocsermons.com and you search for a sermon by Bob Hedrick.
.net.
And you search for the sermon, Wilt Thou Be Made Whole by Bob Hedrick, you'll find it and listen to it. And this is a link. If you type this into your phone, you type this in your computer, it'll link you right to this sermon and you can press play. But this sermon was about, he took this account of the man who was laying beside a pool who had been there for 38 years and with an infirmity. And Jesus goes and approaches him and he asks him a crazy question. He asks them, "Will thou be made whole?" And it's a crazy question because the guy was sitting at this pool for 38 years or however long he'd been there with the desire to be made whole. But Bob really dissected this and really helped me realize something, and I'm guessing others who were there, that sometimes there are impediments of our life. There are things in our life that we know we kind of feel we don't want, but we feel scared to get rid of them. And so his sermon has really dwelled on this. Are there problems in our life? Is there pride? Is there grievance against a brother or sister? Is there sin that we keep in our life because we don't want to go up to the next level and because we might get additional responsibilities? So he really breaks this down. And this is a very impactful sermon for me, and hopefully it'll be for you as well. One of the other things that's a common component of these healings are humility. So I wanted to read one example of this. This is in Matthew 8:5-13. So this is the centurion coming to Christ. This is a Roman. This is someone who is in a place of power. A centurion, based on what I researched, would have commanded around 80 to 100 men in the empire that ruled the world at that time. And yet he came humbly. Let's read this in 8:5-13. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, "Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldst come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say unto this man, Go, and he goeth, and to another, Come, and he cometh, and to my servant, Do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled, and said unto him that followed, Verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you, that many shall come from the east and the west, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus saith unto the centurion, Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee. And his servant was healed in the same hour." So we're put in these situations a lot of times to help us with our humbleness. And that's the attitude we need to have as we come to God in the name of Christ for our healings. And I think about this, the humility of this centurion, who was a man of power, of influence, and the humility that he didn't even want to subject Christ to coming to his home, that he had the faith that he knew Christ could heal him without actually, you know, coming to his home. And I think about the way I approach God, and it's often not with that same humility. Now, I'll do it when I'm laying in bed or, you know, in the middle of eating food or something. I don't come with that same humility that the centurion did and ask for his healing. So an enduring faith, and this is, I broke this out as a separate item because a lot of times the fulfillment of our faith does not happen immediately. It takes some time. And there are some great examples of this. Let's read one of them here. This is in John. Actually, I may read the next one instead. Let's read the next one instead. That other one's good too. Let's read this one. This is Luke 8:40 through 42 and then 49 through 56. Luke 8:40 through 42. And it came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had only one daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a-dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. And there's another miracle that's going to happen in the middle of this story. So let's jump to 49, and this is after a little time had passed. While he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, Thy daughter is dead, trouble not the master. But when Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole. And when he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in save Peter and James and John, and the father and the mother of the maiden. And they all wept and bewailed her. But he said, Weep not, she is not dead, but she sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. And he put them all out, and took her by the hand, and called, saying, Maid, arise. And her spirit came again, and she arose straightway. And he commanded to give her meat. And her parents were astonished, but he charged them that they should tell no man what was done. So there's this time where this man, in fear for his daughter, is given the notification that his daughter has died, and Jesus has to tell him, fear not and believe only, and she shall be made whole. So he has to persist in his faith through that time. Okay, so persistence was another one that I saw come up a lot, and I probably wouldn't notice this, but someone brought up this verse. This is one of those parables that I read, and it's not one you would put on a front of a greeting card or something like that. It's the parable of what I'd call the persistent neighbor. This is in Luke 11:5 through 10. I'm not going to read it, but you probably remember this one. It's where the man has visitors to his house, and it's really late, and he doesn't have any food. And so what does he do? He goes to his neighbor's house, and it's midnight. I think it said it's midnight. And he yells in his neighbor's window, I need some bread to serve my guests who have come. And the neighbor doesn't want to get out of bed. And so he says, no, we're sleeping. Everyone's asleep. But this man continues to ask for this need that he has. And and Christ's message is because of his importunity, he will arise and give him as many as he needeth. And sometimes persistence, asking for the same thing for year over year, it can seem to me a little bit of lack of faith, but it's actually a sign of continued faith that you still think God is able to handle this healing, even though you've been asking it for years and it still hasn't come. That persistence is something that Christ encourages us to do. But we need to make sure we put in the work on our own side as well. So I'm going to read one example of this in Luke 18, 35 through 43. All right. Luke 18, 35 through 43. And it came to pass that as he was come nigh unto Jericho, a certain blind man sat by the wayside begging. And hearing the multitude pass by, he asked what it meant. And they told him that Jesus of Nazareth passed by. And he cried, saying, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And they which went before rebuked him, that he should hold his peace. But he cried so much the more, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stood and commanded him be brought unto him. And when he was come near, he asked him, saying, What wilt thou that I should do unto thee? And he said, Lord, that I may receive my sight. And Jesus said unto him, Receive thy sight, thy faith hath saved thee. And immediately he received his sight, and He followed him, glorifying God, and all the people, when they saw it, gave praise unto God. This next story, I'm not going to read it, but there's a Canaanite woman, a Gentile, who comes and asks Jesus for a healing, and he tells her, it's not his time to deal with the Gentiles, to work with the Gentiles. And he says a statement, another one you wouldn't put on a greeting card, along the lines that am I to feed meat to dogs? And she responds, she's not put off by that, at least not enough to continue her request. And she says, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. And he honors that faith in her and her persistence, and he gives her a healing. And I'm just going to read the last part of this. This is one of the times when Christ heals a spiritual problem. And I'm just going to read verse 19 and 21 of this. It's Matthew 17, verses 19 and 21. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart and said, why could we not cast him out? This is after they had dealt with the man who was possessed, and they hadn't been able to help him. And he said, why could we not cast him out? And Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, verily I say unto you, if you have faith as a grain of a mustard seed, you shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to a yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. Howbeit, this kind goeth out not out, but by prayer and fasting. So there are times when we need that prayer, we need that fasting, in great amounts to be able to get that healing. So another component that you'll see is there's always thankfulness and the glory to God expressed in these healings. And a common question is, it's one I have, is why do we need to have these wounds? Why do we need to have these heartbreaks, these illnesses? And part of it is just the world we're living in. We're living in a fallen world. And part of it, I think, is so that we'll learn the lessons of humility and faith and patience and compassion for others. But a lot of it is to give God the glory, that God can be glorified through our ailments. I'm going to read this verse, and then the readers who are going to help out with the next passage, you should have a microphone. I'm hoping everybody has a microphone. Okay. All right, let's read this one first. Luke 17, and this is when there were the 10 lepers who came to Christ, and he healed them. And I just want to read the verses 15 to 17 of this passage. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, and with a loud voice glorified God, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answering said, were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? And so when I read this, what struck me is, so there was 10% of the people who were blessed came back and thanked God for that, or thanked Christ for that blessing. And I thought, you know, that's probably about what my ratio is of the times I'm blessed and the time I actually testify of that blessing. And so I need to increase that percentage. I need to get to 10 out of 10. All right, we're going to read. There are some in your midst who have said yes to helping with this. This is in John chapter 9, and we're going to read 1 through 41. And this is just, I love this passage. And we, as in Young People's one time, we kind of did a radio play of this passage, because it's a beautiful story, and there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of people involved in the story. So we have people in the audience who have a microphone who are going to help us read through this story. I'm going to get to be your narrator, but then you'll hear the voices of the people involved in this story. So if you want to follow along, it's going to be in John chapter 9. All right, we have all our people ready? Okay, all right. And Jesus passed by. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So before we get started, here's one of the questions. Why was this person born blind? All right, we're going to get started with our next person. The disciples are asking him, who did sin, this man, his parent, or his parents, that he was born blind?
Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work as long as I am in the world. I am the light of the world.
When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay and said unto him,
Go wash in the pool of Siloam.
He went his way therefore and washed and came seeing. The neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said,
Is not this he that sat and begged?
And some said, This is he. Others said, He is like him. But he said,
I am he.
How are thine eyes opened?
A man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed mine eyes, and said unto me, Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight.
Where is he?
I know not.
They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them,
He put clays upon mine eyes, and I washed, and I do see.
Therefore said some of the Pharisees,
This man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day.
Others said,
How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles?
And there was a division among them, and they say unto the blind again,
What sayest thou of him, that he hath opened thine eyes?
Pharisee 1, you want to read that again?
He is a prophet.
But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked him, saying,
Is this your son, who ye was born blind? How does he see now?
His parents answered them and said,
We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself.
These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents,
He is of age. Ask him.
Then again called the man that was blind, and said unto him, speaking of Jesus,
Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner.
Whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see.
What did he to thee? Who opened he thy eyes?
I have told you already, and ye did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Will ye also be his disciples?
Then they reviled him and said,
Thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is.
Why, herein is a marvelous thing, that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. Now we know that God heareth not sinners. But if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing.
Thou wast altogether born in sin, and dost thou teach us?
And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him,
Dost thou believe on the Son of God?
Who is he, Lord? That I might believe on him.
Thou hast both seen in him, and it is he that talketh with thee.
Lord, I believe.
And he worshipped him. And Jesus said,
For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind.
And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him,
Are we blind also?
If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, We see, therefore your sin remaineth.
All right, thank you everyone who helped out with that. So this whole, think about this man who had been blind since birth, and this infirmity was to serve a purpose of that time when Christ would come and need to proclaim himself as this healer, as this Messiah, and it was fulfilled in it, and his faith was fulfilled, and he got to know the Messiah and believe on him. All right, so if you notice the Christ's compassion in some of these, in these stories, that you know, he was constantly oppressed by people who were coming to him with their needs, and he didn't harden to that. He continued to have his compassion for them, and his love continued to reach out to them and heal them. And I wanted just to read. Let's read this one real quick. I'm going to read it off my screen. This is right after Jesus hears that John has been killed. And so he had to feel the weight of that loss, and he had gone kind of into a desert place to mourn, and but he's still sought after by these people who need a blessing. When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship. This is in Matthew 14:13-14. When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. And when Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. All right, so just a final thought. So what about miracles today? Do we still have them? Some people think we don't, but we're going to read in Mormon about whether they do or not. This is in Mormon 4:75-84. Mormon 4:75-84. This will be the final verse we read tonight, as far as I know. All right, 4:75-84. This is on page 711. And now, O all you that have imagined up unto yourself a God that which can do no miracles, I would ask of you, have all these things passed of which I have spoken? Has the end come yet? Behold, I say unto you, nay, and God hath not ceased to be a God of miracles. Behold, are not these things that God hath wrought marvelous in our eyes? Yea, and who can comprehend the marvelous work of God? And who shall say that it is not a miracle that by his word the heaven and the earth should be, and by the power of his word man was created through the dust of the earth, and by the power of his word hath miracles been wrought? And who shall say that Jesus Christ did not do many, many mighty miracles? And there were many mighty miracles wrought by the hands of the apostles. And if there were miracles wrought, then why has God ceased to be a God of miracles and yet be an unchangeable being? And behold, I say unto you, he changeth not. If so, he would cease to be God. And he ceaseth not to be God, and is a God of miracles. And the reason why he ceases to do miracles among the children of men is because they dwell in unbelief and depart from the right way, and know not the God in whom they should trust. Behold, I say unto you, that whoso believeth in Christ, doubting nothing, whatsoever he shall ask the Father in the name of Christ, it shall be granted him. And this promise is unto all, even unto the ends of the earth. So I want to thank each of you for your attention, for all those who participated. And my desire is that for each of you, that we would praise God for his goodness, acknowledge him for his unchangeableness, that he's still willing to do miracles among us, and that our faith would increase.